Welcome back to another episode of the Culinary Road Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Melnick, alongside, as always, Fred Mullins. Fred, what's happening?
Jeff, how you doing? I am well.
You have a good
Holidays
week?
Are creeping up on us.
Yeah, anything quickly exciting happen in your week of work this week, or just a regular standard craziness with the holidays coming up?
Standard craziness, trying to get a box from here to there. Yeah, it's going how it's going. But
sounds
it's good.
Good.
How about so you? How are you doing?
Everything's good. Yeah, we got a great show coming up here. We're going old school, just you and me again. We got an episode where we're just going to be hanging out, the two of us. We have some Thanksgiving beverages to be talking about. This has kind of been dubbed the Fred Thanksgiving wine episode as well, because we're going to talk a lot about Thanksgiving beverages, Thanksgiving wines, and later on in the program, talking about, you know, different packaging and things like that with wines. And then our Ask a Pro segment at the end is also all about wine. So this is the Fred Mullins wine Thanksgiving wine episode.
Finally. It's finally
right?
The podcast is what it's supposed to be.
It needs to go back to being all about Fred.
Well, no, but, you know, we're all going to get together here. And depending on, not judging, depending on your relationships with your loved ones, family, friends, you might need a little alcohol. You might need a lot.
Might need all
you may not need any at all. I don't know. But drinking is on the horizon. So we thought this would be a great way to kind of kick it off. And besides, a good meal is always accompanied by a great drink.
Right.
And they're fun and they're great to have together. And it's an ideal way to celebrate. If you don't want to partake in that, that's fine. But really good wine, really good food. It's just, that's kind of what it's all about. There are a few things in life as pleasurable as that. And I can't name them while we're recording, but you get my drift. And it's a great way to celebrate the people you're hanging around with or drown them out.
Right. Which one? Either one works. So that kind of brings us into our top three, which obviously ties into the beverages and Thanksgiving. We're going to do our top three favorite Thanksgiving beverages. And we'll leave it at beverages, not necessarily wine, cocktails,
exactly,
beer, whatever. Top three, your favorite Thanksgiving beverages. And, you know, there's a couple of sort of classic ones that, you know, I think we might overlap like we sometimes do. But
that's why
the wine guy, you're the beverage guy. Go ahead and take the first pick. What do you got?
First pick. Well, you know, this is kind of new-ish, but it's fun. It's celebratory and it's a little different. But I like doing a spritz.
Spritz
is my, that's what we always have spritz when we start off, you know, Thanksgiving. You know, before dinner, everybody's kind of hanging around snacking or preparing a few things. And there's sort of that just sort of a cocktail party vibe going on. They're, you know, not as strong as a cocktail, even though they're a cocktail, you know, it's you can do Aperol, you can do Cappelletti, but it has that kind of Campari like note to it. Not quite as strong. Typically half and half Prosecco. You can add a little water. I never do. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Right.
I like putting just a touch of bitters in mine, but they're really light. They're really refreshing. And it doesn't matter what you're eating. You know,
it's
going to be something, you know, you could like, you could just be sitting there snacking on cheese and crackers and anything's going to work with that.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, you know, maybe it's your aunt's famous like dip of whatever and you have it, or you're going to do oysters or something like that. It works with all of those, but it's not just opening a bottle of wine and pouring it, because I kind of like to save that for the meal.
Sure.
So that is our cocktail that we launch with. And I'll just say classic. And again, we're not making a dime off of this, but classic Aperol spritz.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we go with.
Yeah. I mean, that's the traditional old school aperitivo in all Italian households, right?
It's just fun and simple. It's good.
You go to the bar in Italy before dinner and everyone's drinking Aperol spritz or Campari spritz or whatever. So that's a good one. That's not a bad way to start the day. I mean, and you can have those first thing in the morning too. I mean, it's kind of like the orange juice alternative, right?
They're kind of brunch like. So that's
you're
the
right.
good thing. If you start your day early, because I know some people have their Thanksgivings at like 1.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you're probably up and having something to drink at 10.
Yeah, you got that bird in the oven at 6
at night. Yeah, you don't want to be slamming down a bunch of scotch because it's going to get ugly.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
It's a good way to kind of gradually warm up to the rest of the meal, the rest of the evening. Yeah.
I got a couple of things. I think you're going to end up taking one of them.
Okay.
But I'm going to skip over that one. I think I'm going to stick with the cocktail route.
Okay.
And I'm going to go with the classic old fashioned. However, we're going to do it the way that we had with Carlo Luciano on the show, with maple syrup as opposed to the sugar.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's going to
be seasonally appropriate.
Yeah. Seasonally appropriate. Ties in the fall. It ties in the maple and, you know, all that kind of flavor. So rather than a sugar cube, you know, throw in a little bit of maple syrup and, you know, just that little bit of sweetness in there. You know, you can still do the cherries and the orange and, you know, whatever else you like to put in there. But, you know, a maple, old fashioned bourbon, I typically go bourbon. It's also a good breakfast choice if you're.
You get the maple syrup. That's absolutely for breakfast.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Come on. Isn't that what you refer to as bridging?
Yes, yes. So I'm gonna stick with that as my first choice. Maple.
I like that
maple
one.
Bourbon old fashioned.
And I don't know too many people who don't like old fashions. And you kind of look like a hero if you're making a bunch of cocktails for people.
Oh yeah,
it's a cool vibe.
Right, right.
I like that one. So I'm kind of torn, but I'm gonna kind of go to the core of the meal since we're talking Thanksgiving. And yeah, I'm gonna go wine. My favorite. It's been my favorite for a few years now, but frappato.
Frappato. So,
so that's a lighter bread from Sicily.
Right.
There are heavier ones, but they typically, it's kind of drinks for those wine geeks out there. It's a little bit like a Bourgogne Rouge, which is a red Burgundy. Not terribly serious, but still really good. It'll handle anything that you throw at it. You know, if you're a family that has, you know, you've got Italian relatives, you are Italian, and lasagna ends up on there, it'll handle lasagna. It won't overpower the turkey, even if the cook dried it out. You know, it's really pretty dynamic and it's just so good on its own. It's a crowd pleaser. Everybody I pour it for likes it. It's not terribly expensive and I just enjoy it. Mm. I don't have to think about it. I mean, I have other things out that are more serious and geeky, but that one I just go back to and it's always on the table now. So that's, and I'll name the producer just because I think it's easier to find. There are other good ones, but Santa Teresa Frappato. It's dynamite. So.
And Frappato's the...
like it, pick it up. But Santa Teresa makes a really good one. Yeah.
Frappato's the grape variety, right?
That is the grape variety. Sicilian. Yep. And it looks... It's one of the few grapes, when you see it growing on the vine, it tastes exactly how it looks. So folks, Google Frappato and you'll see exactly what I'm saying. And message me. We can go over it. I'll bore you to death with Frappato. But that's my number two pick.
All right. That's a good pick. I'm going to go my number two pick. I'm going to go into the wine route, but I'm going to stay with the bubbles and I'm going to go with champagne.
Yes. Yeah, I was really close, but yeah. I already said spritz.
Right.
And I'm going to have champagne
the Prosecco in there. So, I mean, champagne, you know, again, it works with everything. If you're having the oysters, if you're having the, you know, just cheese and crackers, all that kind of stuff, but it'll also stand up to turkey and stuffing and gravy. And, you know, I wouldn't necessarily have the champagne with your cranberry sauce.
That might throw it off a little bit. The bubbles will stand up to quite a bit. It's going to depend. I get where you're coming from, but you're right. That carbonation, the natural carbonation from it, but that it gives you extra texture. It can stand up to fattier things.
Right.
But you know me, I'm a big proponent of sparkling wine, but champagne is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And if you can get that old
bottle of Krug
that you were talking about back in the day.
Yeah, you're talking baller budget. That is an expensive Thanksgiving, but you know what? Why not?
Right. But I mean, I guess, you know, and champagne meaning French champagne, not necessarily.
Yeah, champagne from.
Because I think a lot of people overuse the term champagne. Champagne is not, you know, sparkling wine. Champagne comes from Champagne, France, you know, from that region in France, but also a nice French accorta or, you know.
Now that you're talking about it, cava. Be good. French accorta is made and a lot of these are made the same way champagne is, but they're not from champagne, so they can't be called that.
Right.
But cava, French accorta, there's really good proseccos as well, not just the stuff, the everyday things. There's cru expressions, single vineyard expressions. There's a lot of really good sparkling wines out there, some from South Africa, Australia, heck, all over the world. And if you see something like Classic Method, Metodo Classico, Method Champenoise, Method Traditional, that is all made in the way they make champagne, but champagne can only be from Champagne, just like
and
Napa Valley and Thanksgiving, Red can only come from Napa Valley, you know.
Right. Thanksgiving happens once a year, so I'm going with champagne. Champagne.
You're giving everybody an old fashioned, then you're opening a bottle of champagne, and Jesus, I gave them a spritz and a bottle of Frappato. Good, but we're like operating on two different planes here. I gotta up my game. Oh God, you're really gonna hate my third one. Are you ready?
I'm ready. What do you got?
You're not gonna see this one coming. I'm going, and you're probably gonna think I'm gonna do something like a brandy or something to finish with. Ice cold Pacifico.
Oh yeah.
I just want a damn beer.
I just want a beer. I can't walk through a store. I can't walk through a store and see Pacifico without thinking of you.
Just the beer, I don't have to think about it, and it just tastes really good. I'm a little full, but I don't care. But that's my weird little ritual. Yeah, you know, I've got a really good Vino Santo, or Vin Santo, if you want to call that, that we usually have out, which is a dessert wine, a little more rich and concentrated. That's part of it. But the beer is what I really look forward to. I kind of sneak it when I go downstairs. We got an old fridge to kind of for beverages and everything, and I'll go down there and take a breather from everybody. And it's probably not about the beer as much as it is that 5 minutes of not
having to clean right.
up and kind of be on.
Well, that's an old sort of wine tasting trick that I think I got from you and from hanging out with Lorenzo as well. Is, you know, we taste wine, you know, if we go to a, you know, wine tasting, a producer, whatever, and you're tasting wine all day, never does a beer taste better than after you've tasted wine or drank wine all day. When it's ice cold, and, you know, if you can sneak away from, you know, whatever else you're going, if you can go off by yourself, even better. But maybe, you know, get a friend, drink a beer with you would be cool too, Fred.
Yeah. Well, it's the only child in me. I do things like that.
Sure,
I come back. I come back. I come out of my shell, whether people want me to or not. But that's my 1, 2, and 3. So your grand finale. You're number 3, sir.
So I'm gonna stick with the sort of seasonal idea, and I'm gonna go with local warm apple cider.
Nice.
But it has to have some rum in there.
You're gonna spike it. Yep.
Yeah. Gotcha. Of course.
Ooh, rum. Yeah, rum's nice with that.
Yeah. So, you know, even if it's just Captain Morgan's, you know, just a little Captain's and warm cider.
Yep.
Sort of warms the soul a little bit. If it's
nice... Captain Morgan's is spiced, so it's gonna work really nicely with that. Yeah. Yeah. Right. I like.
You know, and if you can find a nice,
I should have said that. That
would have been local, you know, a local apple orchard, or, you know, something that makes their own, that, you know, is in your neighborhood, in your town, in your city, in your state, whatever it is, and you can find that nice dry apple cider and just warm it slightly. You know, you don't want it to be hot. You don't want it boiling, but just a little bit of warmth to it. You know, if you're outside throwing a football or something, it's a little colder, and you're drinking some Captain's and warm cider. You're gonna be warmed up all the way to the soul.
You're gonna be throwing the heat. that's a really, and fresh pressed cider is so good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've got good cider in the stores, but like when you really get the fresh pressed stuff, it's dynamite.
Right,
it's like candy almost.
Yeah. And if you're ever up in London or New Hampshire, and you go to
I was gonna say,
go ahead and get the cider up.
You had to plug it. You had to.
Yep, absolutely. I haven't worked there since that was my first job ever, so it's been a few years. But I'm surprised that neither one of us took this, because it's sort of the go-to wine for Turkey is a cru Beaujolais.
Yeah,
sort of the honorable mention, I guess.
Totally. Well, Frappato isn't too far off that mark.
Sure. Right.
They're very similar. And if you can find it, and not the popular one you see everywhere, and I'm not going to name names, but Beaujolais Nouveau is really good, but know who you're buying it from, because it can taste kind of like candy sweet, and it's not supposed to. But man, Beaujolais, made from a grape called Gamay, is going to be dynamite. But that's, again, why I picked Frappato. It's easy for me to find it. And so is Beaujolais, to be honest, but I work in Italian wine, so I'm going to pour Italian wine.
Really Italian,
but yeah, that's a really good pick. That that wine won't disappoint. They're not terribly expensive, and it'll work with everything on the table. Everything. And you know what? You're going to look like, you know, you're the expert. Like, oh, I decided to have Beaujolais with Thanksgiving. And who's going to question you? You're going to look like a hero. Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, it was kind of kicking around in the back of my mind. And I think last year we did open a couple of bottles of Beaujolais, Morgon to be exact, but yeah, it's a fun bottle of wine. That is, it's a great autumn wine in general, and move into the rest of the holidays. Like if you do a big feast for Christmas, or, you know, Hanukkah, whatever you feel like celebrating, whatever your family celebrates, and actually New Year's, I will tell you right now, that is so good with Chinese takeout. It's ridiculous. But so sparkling wine. That's a whole nother episode. I don't want to spoil it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, I guess that wraps up the top 3, unless you have an honorable mention you want to throw in there, but I think we got them covered for the most part here.
No, your list is way better than mine, so people are voting on this on Instagram. Justin wins, and I stand by my list, but his is still better than mine. This is what I do, though. It's my groove.
Right. Yeah, so I'm going old-fashioned champagne, and then rum and cider, so.
And let me see, I did add a spritz. For Pato, solid pick. Pacifico.
Yeah. Nothing says no Thanksgiving, over here, folks. Nothing says American no Thanksgiving like Mexican beer, right? Or Caribbean beer.
All right, I just well, like Pacifico. I don't know.
Yeah. So whatever your top threes are, find us on culinaryroad.com. That's culinaryrd.com, and message us through there or on Instagram and let us know what your top three are. But we have discussion coming up here talking about, well, I won't spoil it. We got a nice little discussion coming up here and we're going to, it's just going to be the two of us. We're rolling solo, old school. Yeah, just you and me.
And we're still in the vein and the context of what we've been talking about. We're going to kind of go into this slightly different direction, out of the norm, whatever. We're going to package it differently is what we're going to do.
We should move all right on. So we'll continue our Thanksgiving wine episode with Fred coming up next,
and first, chef little, with Chef Justin.
A yeah. little word from our sponsor here. All righty, welcome back. We are now discussing further on our Thanksgiving wine episode. We're going to talk about alternative packaging with wine, which I know sounds riveting to our listeners at home.
But I think there's like actually, to talk about packaging.
Let's talk about packaging.
Well, but I think there's a lot. If I may, do you mind if I cut in on that point? So I moved to New England from Florida. And I landed in Boston first, and I'll never forget when somebody said, hey, you want to go to the package store with me? And I'm like, no, I don't. No, I don't want to go look at a bunch of boxes and tape, and I don't want to go to a U-Haul store. And like, no, it's a packy. I'm like, I don't know what a packy is. So
I didn't grow up in New Hampshire. We didn't call it that either. We called it
I think it was a New England thing.
Maybe it's just a Massachusetts thing, but I mean, I've heard people call it that, but not New Hampshire. We just called it the liquor store because they have the New Hampshire State Liquor Store, or
it's a liquor store.
Or you know, they sell beer in every other store in the.
Wow, I thought it had like a great state. Punchline there. Just took the wind out of my sails, man.
That's what I'm here for. But we're going to talk about packaging.
Yeah, we are talking specifically about packaging. Yeah.
Right. So there's theories on, you know, what's good wine, what's bad wine, what should good wine be packaged in? And I think most of them are false, or a lot of them are false. But can you just give us, from your expert wine opinion, a summary of the different packages and, you know, packaging processes and how they relate to the wine itself?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what you were just talking about, there's a lot of misperception about what proper packaging is. I would, before I launch into all this, I would probably say still, for now, the best packaging is the bottle with the cork finish. There are some exceptions to that. And I think it'll lead me into the first alternative, in air quotes, packaging, which would be the screw cap. In the industry, it's called Stelvin. So if you hear somebody say Stelvin, that's exactly what that is. It's a screw cap. I think if I have my facts correct, that is either the company or the name of the family who owned the company that created that system, which I know sounds silly for creating a screw cap, but or being the inventor of the screw cap, because they weren't. But when wine was first packaged like that, the problem was it was too perfect to seal. And so the wine didn't necessarily behave or relax or perform the way that it should, because it was, you can't say it was overpressurized. It was just too airtight. Corks breathe, even if they're sealed under foil, even if they're under wax or whatever, there's still some breathing involved. It's minor, but it really, it's kind of like when you think about roadways and things like that, you know, the frost heaves you get worried about, you know, they go away, they expand, they contract, concrete does it. Pretty much everything that we deal with, like metal does it, even glass does it, and that's important. The screw
right,
cap
it's almost
perfect.
It's almost like a dense sponge, right? I mean,
exactly.
A cork itself, it's much more dense than a sponge, but that same, like, air can get in there, moisture can get in there.
And so sometimes they fail, you know, right. and cork, here's the fun fact about cork, you know, it's an old technology, but it works really well. It's not perfect. Nothing is perfect. And it's the cork trees are these, if they're not the slowest, they probably are in the top five, but I've heard people say they're the slowest growing trees on the planet. So that's something that's really hard to replenish.
Right. So how sustainable is using corks? Because I mean, most wines use corks. Is it one of those things that they're starting to realize that it's unsustainable, or is there still quite a ways to go before we're at that point?
We're probably closer than we really think, but there's also recycled cork and composite cork, which is basically using cork over and repackaging, kind of like MDF versus regular plywood kind of thing. You're still using wood bits, wood chips, and they're compressed. They do that with used corks. But yeah, it's an old technology. It's a hard, it is a renewable resource, but a slow renewing resource, which gave the rise to the screw cap. The Austrians and the Germans were really, I think, amongst the first to really kind of put it out there. And they did it with the white wines because the white wines seemed to respond better. But like anything else, I will use the hamburger as a really good example. Yes, McDonald's makes a hamburger, and so does In-N-Out. And then if you make one at home, you can be the judge of which one is better. There's a lot of technology involved in making those first two, maybe. And then at home, it's a little more simple, and it's going to taste really good because it's, it's more thoughtfully made. I don't know. Right. It's curated differently. When you start with new technology, it's never perfect. So when people got wines, and this has nothing to do with it being German or Austrian wines, they were really at the forefront of trying to find a way to make wine more affordable, because it was less expensive to package like that. It's lighter, mm-hmm. and so it's less expensive to ship. Things have changed a little bit. They're a little more pricey, but when they first did it, it didn't work great. Sometimes it was a 50-50 kind of thing. So some of the wines would be fine. Some of them would taste really sour, really bright. So unfortunately, even if there was really well-made wine or high-quality wine bottled like that, a lot of people perceived it as being poor quality wine. Mm-hmm. So when people see screw caps, they're like, oh, I know, I want a good bottle of wine, not a screw cap. Right. Those days are gone. Those days have been gone for like 10, 15, yeah, about almost 20 years. Right. The New Zealand, the Australians, again, the Austrians, the Germans, the Spanish, and now a lot of Italian producers and French producers have gotten on board. And actually here in the States, it's become really commonplace. Again, it keeps the packaging, it's a little less expensive. It's a little more stable. And there is a problem, as you know, we've talked about this before, just in our past lives working together. You know, wines can cork. And if you ever hear anybody say the wine is corked, the wine failed in some way. So something got, there's an error, there's an air pocket in the cork where oxygen got in and spoiled the wine. It doesn't necessarily taste stale. It kind of smells and tastes exactly like it smells, kind of thing, like an old wet basement or a wet dog. The wine's off, and it's nobody's fault. It happens. Right. You can spend a lot of money on cork, spend very little money on cork. They fail from time to time.
Sure.
This helps avoid that. There's very little failure with screw caps. They can leak if they don't seal properly, like anything else. But I think the failure rate of screw caps is like one in 100,000.
Right.
Where the failure rate of cork is like one in 20,000, I think. That's the average.
Okay.
So it doesn't mean like, once you get to bottle 20,000, you're going to get a bad bottle. It doesn't work like that. That's the average. When you think about all the wine that's floating out there, it's really kind of minimal, because people also, when they're shipping things, they drop things.
Sure.
Bottles get broken. So yeah, it's not just about that. So I guess going back to that perception is reality. Screw cap wine is actually really good.
So there's a caveat to that, though, because just because it had a screw cap doesn't mean it's good wine.
No, that's true. And just because it has a cork.
Just because it has a cork doesn't mean it's a good wine. So there are wines that are out there that are screw tops that are fantastic wines. There's also garbage wines out there that have screw tops, too. So I just don't want our listeners to think that, all of a sudden everything with a screw cap is all, going to be a great bottle of wine.
No,
that's not what Fred's saying at all. It's knowing the producer, knowing what you like, and trusting.
And know the source.
Right.
The person you're buying at, the place you're buying it from, if they carry good wines, you like the advice you're getting, they're probably going to try to put a good bottle of wine in your hand, or at least guide you to it.
Right.
And it could be a screw cap. It could be a regular cork.
Yeah. So then the other alternative to the cork is the synthetic cork.
It's like a rubber, kind of a rubbery silicone. Yeah,
so what's the story there? Is that
it's renewable. It's recyclable pretty easy. It's inexpensive too. They're easy to produce in mass quantity. They're really reliable. They don't fail very often. They again had problems when they first started, and they would either seal too tight or not well enough. But now that's changed too. And a lot of people have moved to it because it's affordable. It's reliable. And you know, when you're buying a really dynamite bottle of wine for $12 off the shelf, it's hard to get it to that price point because you have to put it in a box, you got to put a label on it, you got to pay taxes on it, you got to follow the rules and regulations of the land. It's got to be packaged right, and then it's also got to be good juice in there. So there's a lot to get you to that point. And then somebody's got to make their money in between. So that these minor costs become major components in giving you wine, higher quality wine at a more affordable price. And alternative packaging is certainly one way to do it.
We've focused primarily, I guess there's one other lid, the glass, the sort of glass.
Yeah, forget it. Yeah, those are kind of cool, but they also have like a silicone,
it's almost like a stopper or something in the bottom, right?
Yeah, and I love those things. You don't see them all that often. I know they're expensive.
Yeah.
They present really well. They're great. I've only come across a handful of them in my profession. I don't know enough about them. I never had the ones that I've worked with. Never had an issue with it. They reseal the bottle perfectly, which I like, but so do corks and so do screw caps and so on. And I mean, cork of kind of any kind. The only one you can't reseal is champagne.
Right.
Or bubbly.
Regular.
Yeah. You got to get a champagne stopper.
You got to drink the whole thing, right?
Yeah. That's a story for another time.
Right.
But you know, when we talk about making wine more affordable, that's when we kind of move into like true alternative packaging. We talked about closures, which, you know, way back when that was an alternative version of like what a bottle of wine was.
Right. But I think that's fairly minor at this point now.
It's minor.
People have come to the conclusion that, you know, for the most part, that the tops, but there's some people still that will say the screw cap makes it cheap and all that stuff, which, you know, we're trying to put,
try to get them past it. You know, you can choose to take the advice or not, your call.
Sure. But I think you were starting to get into the actual discussion of packaging itself.
Like real alternative packaging. So
right.
Now we're going to take the bottle out of the equation altogether, right? So bag in a box, I think, is going to be the next thing that people think of. So there's a bladder inside of a cardboard box. So it's easy to stack, easy to display, easy to ship. And that bladder is typically 3 liters. Can be 5 liters. That's a lot of wine, by the way.
It is.
But that has come a really long way. And that has like a little spout that you push on it, you know, kind of like a water cooler. Mm-hmm. Like when you, like whatever Little League sport you played, you'd go over and like push that thing. And it would
The old igloo cooler, right?
Yeah, exactly. This thing works exactly the same way, just like a bottle of wine, either screw cap, cork, whatever. The juice that's inside the container is what matters almost more than the container. So again, bag in a box, when people were first doing it, maybe it wasn't the highest quality wine. So people just said, that's low quality wine. And maybe they were right, but those days are also long gone. Going back to what you said earlier, know your producer, trust the source you're buying it from. If you pick up the bag in the box and like, hey, is this any good? They're like, yeah, it's dynamite. You're going to get, like, if it's a 3 liter, that's what? 3 liters, 5 bottles of wine? Am I correct?
No, I think it's four. It's 4 bottles, right? 3 liters.
It is four. Bottles. Yes, it is four bottles of wine, and there's 5 liters. So it's a lot of wine. I will tell you, when you're working with either one of those formats, find something to pour it in that's not your glass. Yes, you should be drinking out of your glass, but pour it in a container, because if you just keep going back to that well and filling it up, that is a rough morning. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with the packaging. Just beware. It's real easy to drink way too much.
So originally, when I thought of bag-in-a-box wines, I, as a chef, immediately thought of cooking wine.
Of course.
You know, you have, it's a cheap alternative. I've certainly gone away from this over the last, you know, 10 or 15 years of my professional career, having wines that you cook with that you wouldn't otherwise drink. And I think I've beat that point to the ground many times. So I think a lot of people think, oh, this is cooking wine, when you think bag in a box. And that's kind of what it used to be, right?
I can't help but have a little bit of that knee-jerk reaction to it, and I know better. But that's kind of like when it was introduced, that's typically where you saw it. It was like on the line and it was there, and you would just see somebody grab a glass, fill it, finish off the pan, put it into the sauce.
Or the alcoholic cook would be treating like a water cooler. And
drinking at one of those quart containers.
Yeah.
What are you drinking there? Ginger ale. That's funny. It doesn't smell like ginger ale.
Yeah, it doesn't look like ginger ale, and you're not standing up straight.
Right? But you're right. I think a lot of people, again, associate it with low quality wine.
Right.
You know, and I'm going to take one step back before I forget. And you're probably too young to remember this, but you can still see them. Every now and then you can go into a store and you'll see jug wine, like on the bottom of the shelf. That was screw cap.
Yeah.
Way before people were even paying attention to it. and I would argue probably not the highest quality wine.
But yeah, I think, you know, with the old like Chianti bottles with the straw and around the outside.
Yeah, you had it had the thumb handle for it, and it was, you know, what was like a half a gallon of wine. It was quite a bit. So I actually left that one out. So shame on me. But getting back to Bag in the Box, you can really get a great, call it a bottle of wine, you can get some great wine for a lot less money.
Right.
It's way easier to package. It's
and again, the money, it doesn't cost less money because the wine is less quality. You're getting four bottles of wine in a 3-liter box that has a bag and all four bottles of wine in it. And the packaging for that box and that bag with the bladder probably costs less than a single bottle of wine, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think on average, it's about 40% the cost of like a standard bottle of wine. But that's four bottles of wine, like you said, if we're talking 3-liter. If it's 5 liters, it's like 6 2/3 bottles. Not quite an even number, but you can see it's volumetric.
Right.
And the reason there's a box involved with the bladder, number one, it protects the wine a little bit, but you can display it. It's easy to carry around. You can put it in your fridge, put it in your pantry, whatever. It's just really easy to store.
Right.
And what a lot of people ask me, were like, well, how long does it last? You know, Bag in the Box, you know, properly stored, not freezing cold in your garage or really hot in your garage in the summer kind of thing or whatever. You probably get a good 2 months out of it.
Yeah, because it's in there. The oxygen. Yeah. So that's the thing. So you mentioned the water cooler,
it's
like
vacuum.
A cooler.
It's a natural vacuum.
It's a vacuum. It's a vacuum seal. So as you pour the wine out, the packaging gets smaller and smaller. There's no oxygen that's left in there. So you're getting the natural wine from the producer directly.
That first glass and the last glass are going to be just as good as one another. That last glass will be just as good as the first glass, I should say. Yeah. And that's the cool part of it. And if you just need like a couple of ounces to finish off a dish with, to cook with, you can do that. Look, I just want a half a glass of wine. I really don't want that much. Insert laugh track here. But you can just have a little bit if you want to, and you don't have to worry about opening the bottle, and you have time to work through it.
I just had this discussion with my wife yesterday. Because, you know, I'm doing a lot of cooking classes and demos and, you know, prepared meals to go and things like that for clients and people in the area and in the Pittsburgh area. And every time I'm cooking something, I buy a bottle of white wine to cook with. And then, you know, I use a cup of it and then I drink the rest of the bottle. And then the next day I'll go out and buy another bottle of white because I need it for a different dish. And, you know, I'm not going to wait. You know, I'm not going to plan ahead and not drink the whole bottle of wine the day before. So I ended up buying just yesterday. I just bought a 3-liter bag in a box Pinot Grigio that was, you know, imported from Italy. And it's a decent wine that I would otherwise drink, but I didn't drink the whole thing.
We wouldn't be talking right now. You'd still be nursing that hangover. Yeah, but yeah, that's the handy part of it. It's convenient, and you get done the right way. You get a higher quality wine for lower money.
Right,
and that was really the idea to make wine more. The whole idea behind alternative packaging is to make wine more accessible to everybody. Which I know sounds like a weird thing to say, but a lot of people, we come across it all the time. People are intimidated by cooking. People are intimidated by talking about wine. It's meant to be enjoyed. Don't overthink it. And these ways of packaging it and getting it to the consumer, they're trying to make it a better experience for you in general. There's going to be companies, brands, and things like that that don't care. They're just going to put it out there. It's whatever's in the bag, whatever's in the bottle, whatever's in the can, which we're going to talk about next. There's always going to be that element to it, but that's the same way with food, same way with books, movies, music. We're just packaging something, consume it.
Right.
That's not what we're talking about. We're people talking about groups, producers, companies working, distributors, importers working to a higher standard. Mm-hmm. Want to give you a better bottle of wine, a better glass of wine, I should say, for less money.
Right.
And it's also, you know, it's greener to ship, or it's more responsible to ship things that are way less, take less packaging, tastes like less effort, less manpower, less resources, all of that. So it's a really good idea, and it continues to get better. Is it perfect? No, but it's awfully good.
Yeah, and there's also some garbage wines out there in bag in a box too. So going back to that same caveat that I mentioned with the bottles,
no, man.
Synthetic cork.
There are two twist. I want to mention so bad, and I'm not going to. No, I really want to.
Now we're hoping for some future sponsorships.
Exactly. I'll leave it at that.
But you know, I think our third episode ever, we had David Mitchell on, who owns Mies Wine Company.
Yep.
And I used to. In the kitchen on Martha's Vineyard at the terrace of the Charlotte Inn, I used all his wine for cooking in the kitchen, his bag in a box that he would bring in. I forget the producer. You remember the producer?
I know the name is producer in Chianti, and I know the wine was called Fiori di Strada, but I don't know the producer itself, but it was awfully good. Well, he had a Bianco, which is a blend of a couple of grapes, and then it was a Chianti.
Right.
Or Chianti. He couldn't put Chianti on it, but it came from Chianti. It was essentially Chianti, but because of the packaging,
right,
he couldn't call it Chianti, but it was really good Tuscan red.
Right. And sure.
I remember looking at it because the Tetra Pak that Justin has brought up was like, it's a liter. And you've probably seen, like, if you go into the store, if you're not familiar with the Tetra Pak, you look at like almond milk creamers or oat milks, that they're not like in a plastic kind of hourglass shaped thing. They're typically in these cartons that are, you know, 32 ounces, maybe they're a liter. But that's a Tetra Pak. And it's basically cardboard with a foil liner. And it's great for almost any kind of liquid. To say, you know, again, that's that's the recyclable packaging, lighter to ship, easier to package, easier to print on, easier to store. And the cool thing about it, if it is a liter, is you get, well, five glasses of wine, as opposed to like the typical four that you get from a bottle. People would say, oh, you're supposed to get five from a bottle, but most people get four.
Right.
But it's, so you get a little more. A liter's more than, you know, 1,000 milliliters is more than 750 milliliters. And the funny thing is, those Tetra Paks tend to be about $2 or $3 less than its equal counterpart in a bottle.
Right.
And this is not to pick on bottles. There's nothing wrong with it, but that's the advantage. They ship better. And again, higher quality wine at a lower price is really the idea.
Sure.
Yeah, and David, I think, was that was the first Tetra Pak wine.
Yeah. So he has the Tetra Pak, but I was also doing bag in a box with him as well.
Yep. Yep.
So, yeah, we were doing both. And
well, I used to bring him in. We had a producer in Asti.
Right.
Cucina Rara, and we had a 5 liter, which was great, but you know, 5 liters was a lot of wine. But at the time when we were doing it, the 3 liter packaging was so popular, you couldn't find anybody, a reliable source. You could get it one time and not get it the next time, and we went back to that well. So the 5 liter worked really well for us. But it's again, you know, that's great for, you know, something by the glass, something to cook with. You know, something you want to serve in a carafe, like if you're a restaurant, you want to like have a glass and a half to offer the table, then a half a bottle and like a full liter for a bigger table. It worked great. We tried that as hard as we could at Tommaso, and we finally got people around to it. Now it's commonplace.
Right.
You know,
right.
To have a house wine, house red, or it doesn't have to be the house wine, house red, or house white, house red. It can just be anything. And this is how we serve it. It gives you a lot of different options. And that's what I like about it. And there's no waste, like we talked about.
Right.
And Tetra Paks kind of fall into that similar category. And think about it, when you're going on a picnic, going on a boat, traveling somewhere, it's just, that's so easy to carry around that 1 liter, like, you know, like again, bottle plus a glass to carry with you. It's fantastic.
Not while you're driving, but other travel.
No. You know, like, whatever outdoor adventure you're having, way easier to carry than a 6-pack.
Well, so we've talked about synthetic corks, the twist tops, the, you know, the glass toppers, Tetra Paks, the bag in a box.
Just the bag now, which is essentially a bag in a box. You've seen those, right? They're typically 3 liters, a little heavier foil, and it's basically the bladder that's more sturdy on the outside, which you know, it's great too, assuming on the producer, the importer, whatever. The only thing is it's hard to stack and display.
Right.
They're pretty sturdy on the bottom, but once you start to get down to that last glass, it's a little tricky. It's again even less expensive because you didn't put the box.
You're not even paying for the box, right? You're just paying for the bag now.
And I've been seeing a lot of like rosés get packaged for that, because rosés is beautiful. You can drink your rosé year round. That is a episode for another time. We are going to do that because I'm sick of people saying rosé's only for the summer.
Rosé season's done, right?
Yeah,
it's like drinking whiskey in the summer. I'll drink whiskey all year round. I don't care who.
Thank you.
Who has a problem?
No, you can only drink beer when, you know, before August, or it's just stupid. You drink rosé whenever you want to drink rosé, anyway. But you typically see rosé in it because, you know, it's here and it's gone, and it's easy to package, and people kind of blast through it pretty quickly. But you're seeing more and more of that, and you know, those typically are 3 liters. I've seen some 5 liters, but that bag, it's heavy. You don't have like the box
right
to hold on to. I actually don't know. I call those bladder bags. I actually don't know what they're called. I'm sure
that
there's
like, that sounds like what it's called then.
We'll go and they have a handle on them, so they aren't that hard to carry. But if you're trying to haul around a 5 liter, it gets a little cumbersome.
Sure.
So we've talked about all of that. The one, and I've been good with a lot of the expressions I've had. Again, like you said, everything we've mentioned in alternative packaging, I've had good examples and less than good examples, very poor examples, and some great examples. Really good wines. I'll leave it at that. The one I've struggled with over and over and have yet to have a positive experience is canned wine.
Okay. I haven't dove too much into canned wine, and probably for a lot of the reasons that you're about to describe, but I haven't had many experiences with canned wine.
It's just like if you take the can and you open it and pour it into the glass, it seems to kind of get over that kind of shell-shocked thing that it has. And I remember screw cap wines behaving like that way back when. There was just kind of this extra, like, it didn't taste metallic. That's not a good way to call it, but it just didn't. We'll just say it's Pinot Noir. It reminds me of Pinot Noir, but it doesn't really taste like
Pinot Noir-esque.
It tastes cheap. That's probably a better way to put it. Mm-hmm. I bet there's good examples out there. I haven't had them yet. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised, but I've tried a lot of them and so far I've been pretty disappointed. And I thought the one category of wine that would overcome it would be sparkling. And actually that's the worst expression I've had of canned wine so far. I just haven't had a good one yet.
Really?
People out there listening may feel differently, and that's great. If you found something you enjoy, have at it.
Yeah, and send us what it is.
Well, that's the whole idea behind this podcast. I just haven't found one for me yet.
Right.
And I would probably, if you were buying wine for me, I'd say, why don't you buy this instead? Whatever this alternative.
Well, it seems like, so the canned wine fad is sort of newer, right? That hasn't been around that long.
But yeah, I feel like it kind of really started to show up like 6-7 years ago, maybe, and I'm sure it was around before that, but I really started seeing it push forward in the market.
But you had mentioned like the twist tops back in the day when they first started, you know, 20 plus years ago, they had problems with them in the beginning, and the same thing with the synthetic corks had some issues with them in the beginning. So maybe it's just the evolution of the can just needs to get to the technology or whatever it is to figure out what the flaws are and fix it.
Yeah, I can't put my finger on it. It doesn't taste right, because I can have canned wine from the same producer, like the same wine from the same producer in the can as opposed to the bottle, and they are always wildly different from each other. Mm-hmm. I promise you could pour a can of wine for me without me looking at it and pour the bottle, the same wine out of a bottle, and I could tell you immediately which one came out of the can. Mm-hmm. And I'm not the only person that feels that way. And I get you, you're right. It's got to be something about the process right now, and it will get better.
Yeah. And again, I haven't had much exposure to canned wines. Honestly, I've maybe had two or three in my life, and it certainly didn't blow me away because I didn't go back for another round.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. If you're drinking out of the can, like you would expect people to do, right? You do that with, you know, canned beer, canned soda, whatever. Like it's convenient, right?
Right.
No.
Right.
I'm gonna take my glass and my can with me and go sit down and lunch. You know, people are gonna open the can and drink it the way they drink it. And I think that's the problem. Wine, you need a glass to kind of get your nose in there, because it's not about snobbery. You're really missing it out. You're missing out on something. And if anybody's doubting me, the next time you're eating your food, pinch your nose and eat your meal like that. And tell me that your roasted chicken still tastes as good as it always did when you can't smell it. It's not true.
Right.
And people are going to say, well, why not beer? I'm like, yeah, beer actually does taste better out of the glass, in my opinion.
It does. I pour beer into a can all the time. I mean, we had Nick Salkett on the show from Stick City. And, you know, they're very adamant about, they give you a can, they make you pour it into a glass because they, you know, they don't really want
it. It's a better experience. Right. And there's nothing wrong with drinking whatever you want out of the can, but you're missing something. I think.
Sure. If you're slamming 30 Coors Lights, I don't think it matters all that much. But if you're drinking a nice craft beer or something, you know, having it in a glass, I think makes a big difference. My father's a big proponent of the frosty mug. He always has mugs in the freezer, and, you know.
Hell yeah.
Anytime we go over there, he's like, I got some fresh frosty mugs. We'll have one beer and then he'll get rid of those and grab new frosty mugs out of the freezer. Ever since I was little, I remember the frosty mugs.
Oh man, I'm an outlier. I love ice cold beer. The colder the better. And I know there's some people out there booing and like throwing stuff at whatever.
Yeah, I think, you know, Europeans, especially when you get into, you know, Germany, Oktoberfest, all that kind of stuff, they're, you know, and Guinness. I mean, they drink Guinness warm all over Ireland.
Yes, they do. But getting back to the wine is more heavily affected by aromatics than you think. Your experience with the wine is more heavily affected. If you can't smell it, you're missing a lot. And believe me, you lose out a lot. Like if it's red wine, you lose a lot of that red, dark, heavy fruit that you might be looking for, or just the nuance. And white wine is going to taste really crisp and clean and kind of uninteresting. And that's the experience I've had. I poured it in the glass and it's been better, but still not quite what I want it to be. Mm-hmm. But that's probably part of it too. I will say there, I'm sure there's good wine in a can out there. I'm hoping to
just haven't come across it yet.
Not yet. So I know there's a lot of people really go, you know, there's really, you need to try this, and I'm all ears, but
yeah, send the suggestions, send the recommendations in. We'd love to test that theory.
Yeah.
And actually send the cans. I'll give you my address.
Give me wine. I'll drink wine. Right. You know, the only other outside of all this, have you seen those like little, they almost look like the size of those yogurt in glass jars. Mm-hmm. Like they're stacked on top of each other and sealed with plastic. Those are a serving of wine or a glass of wine each. They're right. Typically done in 4-packs. You don't see those all that often, but they're out there.
Those are what, 187s or something?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? 187 milliliters. Right.
From time to time. There's also like, you know, Bud Light, I think, started. It was like the aluminum. Mm-hmm. Screw cap. It was shaped like a bottle, but it was really a can with the screw cap. There's that packaging out there too. But outside of that, I think we kind of covered probably the more important major categories of
alcohol. I got one more.
You do?
Yes.
Lay it on me.
Keg wines that you serve.
Oh yeah. You know what? I was thinking consumer.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But I'm always thinking, you know, I always have that restaurant side of me. So we served when we were at Spello, we served a Prosecco and a Pinot Grigio by the glass from the keg on tap. And then we also had a Primitivo. There was a few different reds that we cycled through, but the Primitivo and the Montepulciano were fantastic.
I was going to ask you, what you thought of them?
Yeah, they were great. I mean, you know, we cooked with them in the kitchen. So, you know, I'd go out and I'd fill up bottles for the kitchen so that we can, whether making bolognese or making sauces a la minute, whatever it was, we used those wines. But those were the same wines that we served by the glass in the restaurant. And, you know, they were great. It wasn't amazing wine. It wasn't bad wine. It was drinkable.
Good house wine, right?
Great house wine that you could have with at an affordable price, because again, the packaging, it's in those plastic kegs.
Yeah. So that it's not really a one-way keg, because you can break that down and recycle it. So it's not the big aluminum beer keg that a lot of people are probably picturing in their head.
Right. Yeah. So it's more of that. Honestly, to recycle them is a huge pain in the ass, because you gotta.
I was going to ask you. I never really had to do it. Yeah.
It didn't. You know, they sort of frowned upon the recycling part of it. You know, because trying to break them down just didn't work.
That's too bad.
You couldn't break it down. So, you know, the theory's there. There's a lot of plastic in there, so I don't know how renewable or reusable it really is. If the recycling agencies aren't willing to take them in, then, you know, maybe not a great alternative.
Kind of, what's the point, right?
But it got from producer to consumer through our tap system at a much more affordable price than otherwise if we were open to a bottle at, you know, tableside.
Yeah, I like the idea of tap wine. When I first came across it, because we tried it at Tommaso, we practiced with it like in the store in that little wine room we had. And tried it over the course of a few days. What we were dealing with at the time was pressurization.
Mm-hmm.
It was easy to get the pressure. The problem is if you poured the wine too fast, you could freak out the wine. And I'm fine with that because I know I'm expecting that. But most people, when you put that in front of them, like, why the hell is my red wine fizzy?
Right.
We're not talking about Lambrusco. So that was part of the problem back then. I know that's come a long way. I feel like we've got a bridge for large containers of wine like that, you know, larger alternative containers of wine. Well, if it's a big metal keg, the aluminum kegs, you know, those are typically one-way kegs and you drop them off locally, which is fine to drop them off. But where did the wine come from? You know, if you live in California, West Coast, sure. A couple of spots here in New England, other spots in the country. But if you're not really within a few hundred miles, it gets expensive. That's right. A heavy, heavy thing to ship.
Right.
And it's also a big commitment for somebody to want to work with by the keg. I feel like we're building that bridge, but we haven't seen like the best example of how to do that. But I'm a proponent of it. I really like the idea. And it doesn't have to be a big keg. It can be the half keg or the pony keg.
Right. And it's the same theory with the bag in a box where the oxygen, you know, it's vacuum sealed. So the oxygen gets sucked out as you pour a glass. So the first glass is going to taste the same as the last glass. The only difference is I noticed with our Prosecco, we got down to the bottom, it would have a sweeter flavor, whereas at the top it would, you know, because all the sugar settled, at the top, it would have this great nutty kind of, you know, dry finish. And then as you got lower down in the keg, it started tasting a little too sweet. And, you know, I've
heard a ton of people say the same thing. And it wasn't one specific producer of Prosecco. It just seems to be the go across the board.
Right. It's got to be just that sugar settling.
It's the grape. I mean, it's carbonated wine to begin with. And that's naturally going to happen. It's almost like you throw out the last liter of wine and move on kind of thing. And again, I think there'll be a setup that'll work better, and it's going to look a lot like it does right now, but it'll just be a little better.
You know? Right.
We'll get there. But you know, if we didn't stress this enough, it's trust your producer, trust your source, know that they make good wine. If they're going to bother to put it in alternative packaging, and we covered a lot of them, if not all of them, it's probably going to be really good to drink.
And there's going to be some shitty stuff out there too. Then try it. And if you don't like it, don't buy it again.
Yep. And that happens with food. It happens with how many bad movies have you sat through? Well, I didn't really, I do hit the eject button pretty quickly if it's a bad movie, but that's easy to do at home. But it happens with everything. Don't be afraid to take a chance. But if you can go to a place and they say, hey, say this to them, I really like drinking West Coast Pinot Noir, but I want to try something new. What do you recommend? If you're hearing things you want to hear and they say, well, what's your budget? Okay. What do you like about the one you're drinking? Well, maybe try this. And if they point you in the direction of a bag in a box or Tetra Pak or something alternative, listen to them. They don't want to sell you something you're not going to like. Their idea, their whole job, their whole reason for you to come back in the store is to give you something you like. Good recommendations everybody loves, and that's their goal.
Right.
So I think we beat that dead horse.
Yeah, I think that covers it all. If there's any alternative packaging that we forgot,
let us know. Maybe there's snack packs out there, like those variety bags of chips, and they're just in those little chip bags.
Pringles, you know, wine in a Pringles can. All right. Well, I guess that wraps up this segment of the show. If you have your alternative packaging or if you have those cans,
your stories, your experiences, let us hear it.
Or if you have a good can that you want to send to us, send us a message. I'll be happy to send you my address. You can send me all the free wine you want.
We'll happily drink your suggestions on air even.
All right, we're on to our wrap up. That was our discussion. Our discussion on alternative wine packaging.
Packaging, yes. Yeah.
Not alternative wines, but alternative wine packaging. But that sort of ties into, you had one of our loyal, faithful listeners.
One of our first subscribers is my neighbor.
So tell me what you're, first of all, let's call your neighbor out by name, by their
her name is Erin. I'm not going to give her last name for, you know, just make sure we're keeping everybody safe and secure.
No full government names here.
Yeah, no, we don't want to be tracked. You know, we want to keep this on the down low. But she reached out and she asked about aerators. Are they good for wine and should you use them? And the answer is absolutely yes. So thank you for that question, Erin. It's a really good question. And I actually get that question almost every single time I'm doing a wine dinner or a wine tasting. And you and I were just kidding around about it before we came back. Like, you know, oxygen is wine's best friend and worst enemy. And what we mean by that is oxygen is great for wine when you first open it and pour it. It just releases like all the aromatics. It gives the wine a chance to stretch its legs. And the analogy you use all the time, you've been on a long road trip, you've been in that car for 4 or 5 hours just driving. You don't immediately hop out of that car and then go to the gym and work out. You need a good 10 or 15 minutes to stretch out, kind of, you know, breathe in some fresh air. And the wine is the same way. It's been packaged up in whatever it's been packaged in. We're just going to say a bottle for this instance. And when you get oxygen in there, it just kind of wakes everything up. You know, you get more fruit, you get more aromatics. It wakes up the acidity, the tannin, and just makes the wine alive. It's kind of like I said earlier, like if you pinch your nose and try to eat your food, you're missing half the experience. The wine will open up eventually, but the aerator cheats time. And that's what I like about it.
So tell me,
child.
Tell me what
gratification, and I have no patience. Aerator takes you from having to wait an hour for the wine to really open up to being ready to go in maybe 5 minutes.
So explain to the listeners what an aerator is, because there's some people that have never heard that term before, don't know what that is. So just layman's terms, lay it out. What is an aerator?
Aerator is, and I'm going to give the simplest example again. We are not sponsored by anybody, but there's something, a company out there called Rabbit. They make really easy to use wine openers, and they have an aerator, and it kind of looks like a funnel. So if you ever used a funnel before, it's a little bit like that, and it's a little more like egg-shaped and flat at the bottom. And what you typically do is you hold the aerator, this contraption, over your glass, and you pour your wine into it. It's wide enough to do that. And what happens is it creates this little vortex as you're pouring the wine through it, and it oxygenates the wine and basically pours right out the bottom, and your glass of wine has now been aerated. The more classic method, and there's a million different aerators to get out there, folks. That's a good one. Take your pick. They range as, I think I've seen them for as little as $6, depending on the brand, to as high as like $150, $200. I don't know if you need to spend that kind of money, but it depends what you want and what you're trying to achieve and what you like. But getting oxygen on the wine is the key. They will all do it. The old way of doing it, the classic way, I will call it the standard service or proper way of table service, is using a decanter, which is a big glass vessel. And they typically, the most common shape is going to be the one that looks like somebody took a bottle of wine and kind of squashed it on the bottom, and it's really wide and it's got a wide open like tulip neck. And what you're doing is creating a wider surface area for that bottle of wine. So you pour your wine in there, and instead of being in that bottle kind of all upright, it is now kind of flat and resting and mingling with the oxygen in that container.
And
And
it
that's
creates a bigger
opening up the
surface
wine.
area as well, right? It creates a
Exactly.
bigger
More
surface
surface
area
area,
on the
more
wine
oxygen
itself.
touching more of the wine. And that's helping open up the wine. Again, this isn't about snobbery, but you'll taste a vast difference. And the best example, the best process or experiment you can try is open your bottle of wine at home. Take a sip immediately. Red, white, rosé, even sparkling doesn't really matter. Sparkling won't be affected as much. Open it, take a sip right away, pour it in your glass, take a couple of sips. Come back to that bottle an hour later, if you could be patient, and try it then and see how different and how much better it tastes. You'll be surprised. It's pretty remarkable. It's good right when you open it up, but it's very different. I would argue a lot of the wines I work with are even better the second day. If you've got enough left in there, they just need some time to open up and interact and mingle
I've
with the
never had
air.
that issue where the bottle is still there the second day.
A joke never gets old. Yeah. No, but it's true. Even an hour, 15 minutes makes a big
Sure.
difference. The aerator, the decanter is a way of getting you there quicker. I will say decanters serve dual purpose, and people don't have to get hung up on this. Decanters, you typically have to hold at an angle, like you hold the bottle at the angle, because if you put it flat on the table, it sloshes and can splash quite a bit. You might lose some of the wine, which you don't want to do. Holding it at an angle and holding a bottle of wine and pouring it slowly will help catch, if it's an older bottle of wine in particular, any sediment. So bottles of wine that age for a while will typically, and it's usually more red than white, will typically develop a little sediment. It is completely fine to drink, but it can be a little gritty. It can be a little off-putting when you're getting a texture you're not expecting it. And this basically is a really easy way to kind of filter it. So it'll catch on the neck, and it'll catch in the neck of the bottle before it goes into the decanter. So that's another way. It kind of makes you slow down and pour the wine carefully.
Right.
That's more for the pros, but if you're somebody who collects wine, you probably already know about decanters, or if you're getting into it, it's a good thing to know. Aerators won't do that. That's about the only hang up. I know there's some out there with filters, but
Yeah, the filters don't necessarily get all the
the
sediment. They
filter's going
get
to
some of it,
clog.
but right.
If they have a filter and that's a narrow thing, they're going to clog, and that's probably a nuisance. Maybe there's some that work better. I haven't seen too many of them. So oxygen is good for your wine. You don't have to use any of the things we mentioned. I think aerators are great for 99% of the people out there. If you don't have anything like that and you want to try it, heck, two glasses of wine, pour your glass of wine into one glass, pour it into the other carefully, kind of slosh it back and forth. Don't try not to spill any, and you're aerating your wine. Don't do too much. A couple of times is fine. And if you don't want to do that, if you have a vessel to pour it in, like heck, even a mason jar, if you don't have anything, try it. You'll be surprised. So there's no perfect system. The idea is just to get a little oxygen on the wine. White wine benefits from it. Rosé benefits from it. Red wine benefits from it.
So
Sparkling
that's
wine doesn't really need it because it's already releasing oxygen anyway.
right, and you're gonna end
There are
up.
people who argue that I'm not correct in that, and everybody's entitled to their opinion. I don't think it's necessary. To me, it's going to flatten your sparkling wine pretty
Right, you're gonna lose
quickly.
some of that carbonation.
Yeah, and to each their own. I don't recommend it. I don't think it's a good idea. I'll leave it at that. So yeah, my question is great, Aaron.
My question is, which wines do you recommend aerating, decanting, and which ones don't need it? I mean, you just mentioned sparkling wine, but there's plenty of wines out there that do not need a decanter.
Most wines really don't. You know, it depends. If you're impatient and you want to get the most out of your wine, aerators are great for all wines. Mm-hmm. Again, maybe not sparkling. If you spend a decent amount of money on a bottle of wine, be it red, white, rosé, decant it, aerate it. Absolutely. It is a really good idea. Again, you don't have to do it. If you pull the cork and just wait a little bit, half hour to an hour, they're all going to kind of open up, especially that first glass. Mm-hmm. But when you get more oxygen in touch with the wine, the more it's going to open up, the more it's going to come to life, the more you're going to smell, the more you're going to experience. It's just how it is. I mean, it's science, a little bit of its emotion, a little bit of its perception, but it does make a big difference in how you enjoy the wine.
Right.
I wish I could give you a straightforward answer, but it really doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, okay. Most great. There, I would say a lot of the like less expensive wines will change a little bit, not a lot. A lot of the more important wines, whether you collect them, whether it's like, you know, a cru wine, a reserva wine, something that's a special occasion, they're probably going to change the most because they need time to age. And this is a way of kind of shaving off some of the aging process. Or maybe it's fully mature and you just want to experience it right now, mm-hmm. kind of thing. It's a way of cheating time in a good way.
Right.
The oxygen is. Now, having said that, if you've got half or like, let's say you've only had half the bottle or you drank 2/3 of the bottle, that's fine. That glass of wine that's still left behind is going to be good. When you get down and there's just like, a quarter of a glass left, just drink the bottle. That's the problem. The too much oxygen will kill the bottle. Right. That's going to take at least 24 hours for it to really ruin that last little bit left. And I doubt you're going to do that if you're really enjoying your wine.
Right.
But it does happen.
But if you do have that half a glass of wine, I always, you know, you get those toppers that you can pump the oxygen that'll let it last another couple of days. It's a
vacuum seal and it pulls the oxygen out and you preserve your wine that way.
Right.
And we're talking about the exact opposite. We're trying to get the wine. Let's get it going. Right. Let's really enjoy it. But preserving your wine and opening wine up, two different beasts, and they're both really important.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's all about the oxygen, the best and worst friend.
Exactly. You don't have to do either. You know, if you're going to open that bag of chips and blaster that bag that night, great. But if not, you might want to seal the bag so they're not stale the next day. Wine behaves the same way.
Sure.
If that makes any sense. So I'll leave it at that.
If you have your comments, questions, anything you want to add to it, you can find us on Instagram at culinary.rd at Culinary Road. Fred is at FMIV and I am at Chef Melnick. You can always contact us directly through those avenues. Also, make sure you're following Fred's YouTube channel, Until Next Wine with Fred Mullins. And if you want to contact us otherwise, you can always visit us at culinaryroad.com. That's culinaryrd.com. We'll have all links to all previous episodes, future things coming up, other things that the Culinary Road is dealing with. So make sure you go to culinaryroad.com. And as always, wherever you're listening, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, make sure you rate, subscribe, follow, share, tell a friend, post it on your social media accounts.
Want to spread the word. Add it to your story, folks.
Yes, add it to your story. And if you have an Ask a Pro question, send that in as well. We want to hear your Ask a Pro questions. That was a great one we got from your neighbor there. I guess wraps up another episode of the Culinary Road Podcast. Anything to add?
No, all about wine. We need.
Yeah, no. This was the Fred episode. We're 9 days now away from Thanksgiving, so I guess next week we'll talk more about Thanksgiving food, and then I'll take the driver's seat a little bit.
Yeah, that'll be the back of the house episode.
Fine. But we'll lead it off with some nice drinks
together.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. All right. Well, thanks again, everybody, for joining us, and we look forward to another episode of the Culinary Road Podcast next week.